When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game. Headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Welcome one and all, in here, out there, to... to what the minstrels call The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. It is... For a lot of people out there, it's spring break. For instance, President Biden, he's on a tour of Ireland right now, being shown around by his counterpart, Irish president and magical business gnome, Michael D. Higgins. Higgins invited Biden to spend the morning at his home and cemented their friendship with a tree planting ceremony. That seems like a lot of fanfare for something so small. Oh, look at that. My tie's crooked. I think we got all the juice out of that. I think we got the juice all out of that one. Biden also became the first U.S. president to ring the peace bell, which commemorates the Good Friday Agreement. Look at him go.
This is from my Irish ancestors. Fourth one for peace.
All right, fifth time's the charm. All right, one more to grow on. Lucky number 7. Crazy 8s. Just come get me when dinner's ready, Jack. Papa Joe's getting his clang on. Come 7, come 11. Boxcars. Back stateside, you know that giant leak of classified Pentagon information about the war in Ukraine and a bunch of other stuff that's been all over the internet this week? Well, this afternoon, they caught the leaker. It's 21-year-old Air National Guardsman Jack Teixeira, seen here not ready for what comes next. Teixeira was taken into custody in Massachusetts, where just moments before, he was seen from a helicopter reading a book on his porch. That book, Solitary Confinement for Dummies. Now, for taking these classified documents home, Teixeira could face charges under the Espionage Act and could get up to 10 years in prison per document. So he's in trouble unless he declassified them with his mind. Because that, you can take anything home. You can take anything home. The feds may have been tipped off by a story in today's Washington Post. Reporters tracked down a video game chat platform used by Teixeira and interviewed an anonymous member of Teixeira's group who said he knew the leaker's real name, the state where he lives, and that he went by the nickname OG, which stands for, oh, Jesus, I shouldn't have told that guy my real name in the state where I live. The informant from the group described Teixeira as a young, charismatic gun enthusiast who, while searching for companionship amid the isolation of the pandemic, shared highly classified documents. proving that men will talk about literally anything else before sharing a single emotion. Much of the info on OG came from a group member, and this group member is so young that the Post obtained consent from the member's mother to speak to him and to record his remarks on video. The Post also blurred his face and backlit him to hide his identity. But we have obtained an exclusive clip, which may contain a few clues.
He did see himself as the leader of this group, and he was the leader of this group.
Brandon, dinner! It's time for dinner, Brandon!
Mom, don't say my name. It's supposed to be anonymous.
Brandon Noah Johnson, you get down here right now!
Of course, the fact. Brandon Noah Johnson. Okay, we checked that out, eh? Of course, the fact that this stuff was sitting around on a video game chat is still embarrassing for our intelligence services. And they have announced that they may change how they monitor social media and chat rooms. So gamers, keep your eyes peeled for posts like this. Hey, other game teens, where'd you yeet those dope classified docs? You can tell me, fellow youth, I hate parents, no fam cap. Over in Fox News News, today they began jury selection in Dominion's $1.6 billion defamation suit against Fox, and this trial's gonna be juicy. For instance, the judge has ruled the Dominion can compel testimony from Fox News personalities Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Jeanine Pirro. And to make sure Jeanine Pirro tells the truth, they're swearing her in on a box of wine. And, oh, I love a nice box. The excitement has already begun. Yesterday, the judge sanctioned Fox for withholding evidence and appointed a so-called special master to investigate whether Fox previously made assertions to the court that were untrue or negligent. So the job is to figure out whether Fox News lies? Hold on. Am I a special master? Do I get a sash? Where's the papa? Let's get to the withholding and or lies. Turns out Fox is also being sued by one of their former producers. And that producer's lawyers just released this bombshell. There are secret Fox audio recordings of Rudy Giuliani and other allies of the former president. And this judge is pissed because Fox had these tapes and never turned them over, and they are damaging. Just ask Fox News host and Real Housewife of Nuremberg, Maria Bartiromo. Before going on air with Rudy, Bartiromo grilled him about whether he had any proof to back up his claims about Dominion.
I'm going to be asking you as much evidence as you can tell us about these lawsuits. Whatever you can tell us in terms of evidence would be really helpful. Okay, great.
I can tell you exactly what we have.
Perfect. This Dominion software, does Nancy Pelosi have an interest in it?
I've read it, but I can't prove it.
But this bottle can prove it. It says right here on the label, 80 proof. So now Fox News employee Maria Bartiromo knows there's no proof that Nancy Pelosi was on Dominion's payroll. So if she implied otherwise, it might put her or Fox in legal jeopardy. Let's go to the tape.
Sydney, I want to ask you about these algorithms and the Dominion software. I understand Nancy Pelosi has an interest in this company.
Oh, Maria Bartiromo said the phrase that pays. Johnny, tell them what Dominion's won.
$1.6 billion! And the solid gold dinette set from Broyhill. Broyhill, suck it, Rupee. You'll reap what you sow, you wrinkly demon scrotum. Back to you, Steve.
Thank you, Johnny. The judge was also upset that after Fox's lawyers claimed that Rupert Murdoch had no official position at Fox News, turns out he actually does. And it doesn't look like he's giving up control soon because reportedly Murdoch assiduously avoids any discussion of a future in which he isn't in command of his media empire and reminds people that his mother lived till 103. Oh, and Rupi could make it to 103. Because just like a fine wine, the older he gets, the more the weird sediment begins to collect. And it's not just... It's not just his work life that's going down the Roop tube. Murdoch recently called off his engagement to former dental hygienist Ann Leslie Smith just 2 weeks after announcing it. I know, that's so sad. But on the bright side, ladies, he's back on the market. Hello. Put on your flirting shoes and get good at telling whether something is a liver spot or a lesion. Is that a skin tag, or are you just happy to see me?
Wow.
It's a fun image. It's a fun image. She might not be missing out on much, because apparently Rupert is not the greatest husband. Case in point, a year ago, he broke up with his wife, Jerry Hall, via email, writing, "Jerry, sadly, I've decided to call an end to our marriage. We have certainly had some good times, but I have much to do. My New York lawyer will be contacting yours immediately." Adding, "Use discount code Splitsville for 10% off your divorce attorney." There's news from baseball, America's pastime after football, guns, beef, and anger. In an effort to speed up the action this year, the MLB introduced a pitch clock, and it is working, because average game time is down 31 minutes, on track to be the lowest since 1984. Wow. Yeah, man. Yes. Of course, in 1984, players sped up the game with an innovation known as piles of coke in the dugout. But the pitch clock has hurt one of baseball's most important traditions, and that's drinking. Because shorter innings means teams have less time to sell beer at games. What? If I can't have three $12 beers, how am I going to be drunk enough to buy two $15 hot dogs? We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, Nicolas Cage.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Korra on The Legend of Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Zuko on The Last Airbender and General Iroh on The Legend of Korra. Each week, we'll recap and discuss another episode of The Last Airbender.
I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but...
Amazing guests stop by, from creators to cast to super fans, to chat all things Avatarverse.
Are we saying that this is possible in the Avatar universe?
Varney, we gotta spread the word. Now fans can also check out our weekly video pods, too, by subscribing to the official Avatar YouTube channel.
That's a lot of fire, isn't it?
That's right, we're on video this season, everybody! So, whether you're a super fan with encyclopedic knowledge or you're brand new to this incredible world...
It's Fire Nation time, Book of Fire. Let's go! Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Show already in progress. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest tonight is an Academy Award-winning actor who has been in some of your favorite movies. He now stars in the new film, Renfield. Please welcome to The Late Show, Nicolas Cage. Yes,
well,
sir.
First of all, it's remarkable to me that this is the first time we're meeting.
I know. I've looked forward to this for a long time. Very excited to find out you're coming on.
And second, it's been over 10 years since I've been in the Ed Sullivan Theater with David Letterman. I see you've done some amazing things to this place.
Yeah. A couple coats of paint.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful, yeah.
Well, as I said, it is very exciting to have you, Nicolas Cage. I'm a Nicolas Cage fan, and there you are, Nicolas Cage, right there.
It's just me. It's just me.
But if you want that Nicolas Cage feeling, you can't do better than Nicolas Cage.
Oh, well, thank you.
You've been in so many movies. Everyone's got their favorites. Obviously, I'm a National Treasure fan, a Raising Arizona fan, Leaving Las Vegas, Valley Girl.
Oh, yeah. I was 17.
17 years
Ballinger,
old, and my high school girlfriend had a crush on you, and I still am a little mad at you about that.
Oh no!
What are Nick Cage's top five Nick Cage films?
Ooh,
let's lay it down.
Okay, right, I'm going to start with Pig. That's my favorite movie I've
Pig.
Ever made.
That's fairly recent.
Okay,
yep.
I love Mandy. The movie that Panis directed. I love Bringing Out the Dead, Martin Scorsese directed. So I loved Bad Lieutenant, Werner Herzog. I loved a movie called Joe that David Gordon Green directed.
All right, there you go. I go Face Off, but that's
okay. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
I love Face Off.
Yeah, that looked like it was a lot of fun to make while you were making it.
Yeah, you know what was interesting about Face Off, and I could have mentioned Vampire's Kiss, because Vampire's Kiss was a little movie I made where I was able to explore my more abstract dreams with film performance. I was sadly playing a character who was losing his mind, but he was beginning to think that he was the vampire from the original Nosferatu movie. Yes. And when you're playing a character who's losing his mind, he can believe he's Nosferatu. So I got to act like a German expressionistic silent movie star. And that was cool, like these facial expressions and whatnot. But Face Off was a big movie, a big studio movie that I made at Paramount. And I was able to use what I learned from this little Vampire's Kiss movie and put it in this giant movie, and it worked. And I was like, people really dig this. So I was very happy with those results.
You talk about the big studio movies, but you've said, if I have this correct, you've said you like making small movies more than big ones.
Yeah.
First of all, there are no small Nick Cage movies.
Well, thank you.
But why do you feel that's more enjoyable for you?
Well, I guess it's because I think when it's an independently spirited movie, you're trying to do something original, something independent in the storytelling process. Mm-hmm. When there's not as many dollars involved, you can take bigger risks with the story and even with performance. And I think that's why I feel less pressure making the smaller movies. Perhaps I can dig a little deeper and not have too many cooks in the kitchen, if you know what I mean.
I don't actually know what you mean. Because I've never been in a big film. I don't know.
Well,
like Con Air.
Well,
Con Air seems like a different film. I'd never seen that before.
Well, that's true. That was an
big
original
film.
It's a big film. But I think we're seeing it less and less. Now we're seeing more sequels. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that when you have a lot of money on the line, you have more suits on set and people wanting to know what you're saying. Whereas
sure.
on a smaller film, there's a little more oxygen in the room and
right.
you can dig a little deeper.
You've made headlines sometime, I think it might have been during COVID a couple years ago. You said you prefer the word thespian to the word actor.
Right.
And I'm curious why being pretentious is appealing to you.
Okay.
That's why I say Colbert instead of Colbert.
Right, no, that's a great thing you brought that up.
Yeah.
Now, listen, what I was saying was, of course, you can call me an actor. And by the way, I never said, don't call me an actor, call me a thespian. That's what Clickbait Universe were doing, put out there, and somehow it got picked up by CNN. I'm not sure how it got picked up by CNN. I'm sure they have more important things to report on. Well, what I was saying was, I see acting as storytelling. And what it is trying to get to the truth of a character. And the first actor in Europe was someone called Thespis. And what happened there in Greece was that he broke free from the chorus and started narrating and started telling a story truthfully. So to me, acting is trying to find the truth of a story. Now, what's interesting, literally the word actor in Greek means hypocrite. Well, I don't want to be thought of as a hypocrite. I'm sorry if that sounds pretentious.
Let me ask you about being an actor. Let me ask you about being an actor, because I was an actor for many years, and I used to think when I was acting, I think, I'm a working actor. I'm always going to work. Yeah. But when I wasn't acting, I'll never work again. And do you even at your stage,
wow,
do you ever have that feeling?
Oh, yeah. I think what we do is freelance, you know? And this is a time where I've, by design, decided I want to take a break. I want to be with my daughter.
Right now?
Right, yeah, I want to see what comes. I don't want to have something always in the pipeline that I have to think about and prepare. So this is a little bit of a breathing room for me. But even now, you know, you can go all the way back to Humphrey Bogart, one of the biggest stars of all time. He would go and have a martini at the the Pacific dining car in Los Angeles going, I'm never going to work again. Or David Jansen from television was worried he was never going to work again because what we do is freelance. You know, we don't know where the next job is coming from. And those anxieties do come in because we care. We want to work.
And also the industry, those suits you were talking about on the set, are always going, well, what's the last thing you did? Because see you as an extension of the last thing that you did all the time.
It's so true. You're only as good as your last movie. It's they don't seem to remember all the other stuff.
Well, let's talk about your next movie, extremely enjoyable. Yeah. The new movie is called Renfield. It stars you, Nicholas Hoult, Awkwafina, and Ben Schwartz.
Great.
It's funny. It's horrifying. You're Dracula.
Yes.
What's the premise?
Well, the premise is it's a unique one, and it's a very good one, I think, and very relevant, very current. And Nick Hoult plays Renfield, and this is his movie. He is starring as Renfield. Mm-hmm. And he's so witty and so charming.
For those who don't remember from the original story, Renfield is sort of...
Well, he was played by Dwight Frye beautifully in the original Bela Lugosi movie from Universal Studios, Dracula.
He's like a manservant to Dracula.
Correct. But in this movie, Renfield is the star, and he's trying to escape from a toxic relationship, a codependent relationship. He's trying to free himself from that, and Dracula won't let him. And
who's a narcissist?
He's a sociopathic, a king of bait and switch tactics, narcissist. I'm sure they had a lot of fun together maybe 200 years ago on the road as rogues.
Right, yeah.
You know, and having
the
big laughs.
But
now the relationship has turned sour. And Renfield wants out. And he realizes the error of his ways, and I don't want to let him out. Because to me, Dracula, for my view, the reason why Dracula is so compelling as a character is even though he's a supernatural character, he's really still about the human experience. This addiction to blood, well, you can supplant that with alcohol or heroin or sex, and that's a very human issue. Or this curse that he has of eternal life. Well, what does that really mean? That means he's going to be getting his heart broken over and over again forever. So he's very pained by that. Mm-hmm. So in this clip you'll see later, when Renfield wants to leave, it's a betrayal to Dracula, and he's very hurt by it.
Because Renfield goes into group therapy.
He goes into a codependent group therapy.
He does.
It's actually, but that was the tricky balance because it's actually not a funny subject matter. It's a serious subject matter. So we had to find a way to play it and give it pathos and genuine regard for this serious situation and then tap dance around it to find where we could mine the humor, if
right.
you will.
The humor and the multiple decapitations. Because
yes, there's a lot of that.
It's
going
a horror movie, too. Let's not forget that.
Indeed. And one of my favorite tones in filmmaking is this blend. You wouldn't think that horror and comedy go so beautifully together. But if you think about American Werewolf in London, delicious. I was in the cinema watching. I was like, wow, I'm laughing, and now I'm really scared. It just slaps you around. I'm like, wow, this is great filmmaking. And that's the bullseye we were trying to hit with Renfield.
Well, here's one of the bullseyes right here, Jim.
Would you like to introduce yourself to the group?
I'm the Prince of Alesia. Some call me the Dark One. Others, the Lord of Death. However, to most, I am known simply as
Renfield's boss.
I am Dracula.
Okay, obviously we're dealing with a little bit more than just narcissism here.
We have to take a quick break, but do not go anywhere because we will be right back with more Nicolas Cage, everybody. Stick around.
Hey, everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate, though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week, I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Nicolas Cage, everybody. How do you approach portraying Dracula? You've done a lot of parts. You've done over 100 movies, but this is such an iconic part that so many people that I'm sure you admire have played the part before. Indeed. How did you avoid those roles, or how did you draw inspiration from them?
Well, what I did as a starting point was to look at my favorite interpretations of Dracula. Now, my personal favorite was Christopher Lee in the Hammer horror films. I thought he looked great with that 60s slick back hairdo and all these wonderful clothes that he was wearing. He really brought the animality, the ferociousness to the character. I loved what Langella did. I loved what Oldman did in Coppola's movie. And so there was a lot to look at, but then I also wanted to find influences that were more close to me. And I think the biggest influence, because my father, August, he liked to speak with this mid-Atlantic accent. I was kind of channeling him in Vampire's Kiss, so I brought his voice back for Dracula. He was like, you know, Nicholas, let me explain something to you, okay?
And so, is this how your father would talk?
Yeah, that's how, because he said, I want to speak with distinction because I'm a literature professor. And so he had his reasons, but I could never understand why he spoke in that continental accent.
So a bit of an actor himself.
I guess he was speaking with distinction because he was teaching about great literature, so what else was he going to do?
Sure.
So he was a big influence. And then the other big influence, believe it or not, was Anne Bancroft from The Graduate. Her performance as Mrs. Robinson, I thought that was a very toxic relationship that
very
she
manipulative.
Had with, manipulative with Dustin Hoffman. I thought, and the way she spoke in that, well, doesn't he look like the kind of guy who has to fight him off? Yes, he does. And that's Dracula.
Count Dracula, you're trying to seduce me.
Well, I hadn't thought of it. Do you want me to seduce you?
He's got some great clothes. He's got some great outfits. Do you ever keep the stuff that you wear? Do you ever keep stuff from set?
Well, I came into Wild at Heart with this snakeskin jacket that I found in a secondhand store off of Melrose called
you
Aardvark.
You sourced that.
I sourced, and I said, I don't know where, but I'm going to wear it in a movie at some point. And I said to David Lynch, you know, I want to sort of have a kind of a Marlon Brando in the Fugitive kind look, so I want to wear this snakeskin jacket. So I like it, Nick. And then he wrote Nickster. He would say, I love it, Nickster. That's solid gold, buddy. And then he would write, you know, okay, this here's Jack is a symbol of my individuality and my belief in personal freedom. And I said, I kind of want to bring Elvis Presley into this. I think Sailor would look up to Elvis as a kind of power force for him to channel. So it was sort of my what I call Warhol performance, in that I was taking these icons like Elvis and Brando and meshing them together and doing what I wanted with the way they spoke and the way they dressed.
Did you ever meet Brando? Did you ever spend any time with him?
I did meet Marlon, and I said...
Marlon.
Yeah, and I said to him... he was giving a talk. He showed his movie Burn back then at CAA, and I went to the screening with Giovanni Ribisi. And I said afterwards, I said, Marlon, I just want you to know it. I mean, everything you've done has really inspired me to be an actor. He said, oh, Jesus, Nick, give me a break. And an entirely different response I had was Jerry Lewis, who I also grew up watching.
Sure.
And he was my favorite
the
comedian.
Greatest.
Oh, yeah. And I would watch him and wait for him by the TV in the 60s, willing that he would come on TV and the Nutty Professor would come on. And more often than not, it did, because it was the late 60s.
Yeah.
And I would always talk about how much I admired him on Jay Leno or David or whomever. And I got this call. I said,
Nick, it's Jerry. I just want you to know there's an old-timer from the other side who just loves what you're saying. Well, listen, why don't you come out to Las Vegas? I've got a great show with Sammy Davis Jr. I want you to be my guest. And so I flew out with my brother, and we sat down. We saw the show. It was a great show. And he did the typewriter gag. It was just wonderful. And then afterwards, I went upstairs to his suite, and I waited to say hello. And then he came out in a Japanese kimono and baseball socks with a shrimp platter on the piano. And I just said, Jerry, I just want you to know, it's really, for me, it's just you and Brando. And he took about a 30-second pause, and he said, well, Brando's good also.
So jealous.
Yeah.
So jealous of being Lewis.
But what's interesting about that is you see two uniquely different responses. You know, one is very Brando and one is very Jerry.
We have to take another break, but don't go away. Nicolas Cage, when we come back, stick around.
Late Show Poncho listeners can get 20% off on all Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise on ParamountShop.com. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show shirts, mugs, accessories, and more with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
Hey, everybody, we're back with the star of Renfield, Nicolas Cage. Is it true that you're thinking about doing a musical?
Well, I think if I was ever going to go on Broadway and do a musical, the only part that would make sense for me, because I have, over the years, blown out my voice singing Purple Rain by Prince incorrectly in karaoke bars. So now I have a very kind of shrieking punk rock gravel to my voice. But I think that might lend itself to Pontius Pilate in Jesus Christ Superstar.
My favorite. It's my favorite musical. I would do anything to be in that musical.
Oh, I love
that. There's no part in there for me.
What?
I mean, maybe Peter or somebody, a smaller part like that, but...
Do you have the time? I mean, what? It's 8 shows a week, 5 months. You're busy here.
I would quit the show.
You quit the show.
But Punch, I can see Pilate. All the power of Rome and the mania of that part.
Yeah.
And so the king is once again my guest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to break out into song tonight.
And why is this... Was Herod unimpressed? We turn to Rome.
Don't let me stop your great self-destruction. Die if you want to, you innocent puppet.
Gotta happen. Gotta happen. Oh, God. Well, look, Nick Cage.
Stephen Colbert.
Let's not make it another 58 years before we talk again, okay?
You got it.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to the Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
CBS Sunday, after the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions. If you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after the Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.